Web Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It is the Brad Sesmat Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Joined here in studio today, Paula Bovin. Great to have you back. Envious of what you got to experience last week in Houston. We'll get into that a little bit. How are things? How was that trip? We'll talk more about it, but just overall, I know you love covering the Final Four.
Yeah, it's absolutely my favorite event, and I'm really excited for the Valley next year because I don't think people appreciate how fun it is for the fan experience. But I was really lucky because I've been covering this thing so long, they kind of take care of me with seating when I go there. So I was just three press seats off the rows off the court. Oh. And so I just had this close up view of that ending, and it was so fun.
What around the Final Four, both from a media perspective but also a fan perspective, makes it your favorite in your eyes?
You know, I'm a college sports fan to begin with. So you get that, you know, Super Bowls, which are awesome, but they're very corporate. There's the big money is there, the people who can afford it. The Final Four, teams find out like a week before that they're going, and there's sort of that college rah-rahness, which I just enjoy. But also, you know, there is always held that weekend a huge coaches convention. So every college basketball coach in the country is there, basically staying the big ones at the same hotel. Next year it'll be downtown Phoenix. And these guys are all just walking around. It's the most entertaining thing to sit in the lobby of that hotel. And, you know, Krzyzewski's walking by and some young coaches trying to, you know, stop him about getting a job. And, and you know, Frieder's running into John Thompson and guys who've been there a long time and new guys. And it's just... it's great access for college basketball fans.
It's amazing stuff. So coming up here on the show today, Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider. We'll talk a lot of Diamondbacks, what's going on with the starting pitching, but also how about this hitting? You know, it's right. They unfortunately dropped the opening series, and they've got your favorite team coming to town, Paula, the Chicago Cubs. What great timing to have you in the studio.
I'm feeling nauseous a bit.
Yeah, if you're going to spew that way. And then later on, really excited to be joined by the Suns interim head coach, Earl Watson. Got a lot of fun stuff to talk about with him, especially a young man by the name of Devin Booker, who I can't say enough good stuff about. So it'll be fun to get his perspective on the 19-year-old. But first, Paula, speaking of Suns, we'll switch gears to Diamondbacks in a minute. But so a news comes down from Mitch Lawrence, who writes for the Sporting News.
Yeah, and I think it is Sirius Radio.
Sirius Radio this morning about how the defending national champion, who you saw up close and personal, Jay Wright, is being linked to the Phoenix Suns. Now, that's just a rumor.
Right.
But while you were in the Final Four and you say the interesting people you come in contact with and the interesting people you meet and see, you learned an interesting nugget that would have that rumor actually make sense.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because on the way here I was debating whether to share it, but I had already shared that I had this conversation related to another thing, so I felt I'm just going to go ahead and with it. So on the plane from Phoenix to Houston, I sat next to Sean McDonough, who is terrific, one of my favorite announcers, just really good. He's obviously the brother of Ryan McDonough of the Suns, and just top quality announcer and great guy. And in our conversation, he said, oh, I don't know if you're looking for stories, but I was at a barber shop in Phoenix not too long ago, and the barber said his son played for Villanova. And so I thought that was interesting. So I called my good friend Jay Wright saying, hey, I'm in this barbershop with the father of one of your players. And he went
cool.
on. I know. And he went on to tell me. So he gave me this great story. But he went on to tell me that Jay Wright was a good friend of his. Obviously, he called him up. Wright answered the phone right away and everything else. And I kind of remember it thinking he said something to the effect of Wright is a family friend of the McDonoughs. So, you know, whether this has anything to do with anything, the bottom line is it sounds like there has been some kind of history there. I'm not surprised at all that Wright is the hot commodity right now.
No.
I mean, after that Villanova victory. And so it may just be interest. I don't know if it's mutual. I don't know if it's true, but it's kind of intriguing.
Doesn't it seem like the McDonoughs know everybody?
It does. I know.
All the walks of life, it seems like everyone knows a McDonough.
Right.
And because you know a McDonough, you know the whole family.
Absolutely.
I found that that's happened multiple times. So that's interesting. I'm not taking much of it, you know, with a grain of salt at this point.
Right.
Rumors will be rumors. But the notion of Jay Wright would be interesting because he is a phenomenal head coach. I have nothing but respect for what he's done at Villanova. I just thought that that was a very interesting nugget about,
yeah,
about his connection to the McDonough family. So
the other part of it is, you know, Jerry Colangelo goes to Final Fours all the time, and I ran into him there and talked to him as well. Not about this, but, you know, now there's you wonder, Jerry being in Philadelphia, will there be some pursuit of a Jay Wright there? Or, you know, Eric Sorensen mentioned schools like Villanova if Wright leaves. So it's kind of interesting, you know, all these pieces fitting together.
It creates a domino effect. Mm-hmm. There's no question about it. That's Paula Bovin. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today on the show. So good stuff there about Jay Wright, which is rumored to be with the Phoenix Suns at this point. Very early in the process, though, for the most part. Let's switch gears to the Diamondbacks now. Very disappointing start overall. Drop 2-3 to the Colorado Rockies, who are playing on rookie mode, video game style, with the way that they're hitting Diamondbacks pitching. Trevor Story, the story of the weekend. This is a guy I'm just kicking myself because, you know, I'm a big fantasy baseball guy, and I have a desperate need at shortstop. And I decided to hold on to a guy I ultimately dropped
oh, no.
when Trevor Story was available. Because I was at that point, we didn't know what was going on with Jose Reyes. He's a young guy, never even been in the big leagues yet. Sure enough, he hits 4 home runs in his first 3 games, which is the most for a debut since 1900, when they were playing slow pitch softball. And so a tough weekend for the pitching. Zach Greinke and then Shelby Miller and Patrick Corbin all fall victim of the long ball. The team overall gives up 10 home runs. Out of the 15 runs scored by the Rockies, 10 of them were, there was 10 home runs hit. And Chip Hale said it, that when we made mistakes, they were home runs.
Right.
You know, so when you make mistakes, you know, maybe they'll result in a single or a double. But when you make mistakes and they end up being home runs, that's the difference between winning and losing a series. Start with the starting pitching and and kind of not overreacting,
right?
But the disappointing start in that facet of this team that was supposed to be seen as those three pitchers as strong of a strong suit that this team had.
You know, and I think the disappointment, at least from my end, because I can't believe Zach Greinke's not going to turn it around, you know. And I actually thought Corbin, for the most part, pitched pretty well. But I think the disappointment, Jared, comes from sort of the marketing standpoint of it. There was such excitement coming out of spring training. I mean, look, they had the best record in the Cactus League. Greinke looked great. I just, there seemed to be a lot of buildup and excitement. And so just not having that momentum, I think, is disappointing. But I certainly didn't, I was at the game yesterday, I don't sense panic at all. I mean, I think they respect Colorado, that lineup of hitters. They feel like, you know, each pitcher giving up 3 home runs, they made bad decisions and everything else. But you're not hearing things like, oh, what's wrong with his arm kind of talk. You know, it just, you know, maybe it's the pressure, maybe it's the weight of expectations, or maybe they just had a couple bad outings.
Maybe the Rockies are just a good hitting team.
Yeah, I think they are.
In a hitter's ballpark, you know. That's why, you know, Eric and I have been talking about this for 2 days as we filled in for, I've filled in for Brad the last couple days. We've been talking about the unbelievable overreaction, how when as part of our society now, especially being in this business, when something great happens or when something bad happens, the first thing you think to do is pull out your phone and look at Twitter.
Right.
And
so true.
And when stuff was hitting the fan with Greinke and then Shelby Miller and even again with Patrick Corbin yesterday, you couldn't help but do that exact thing and see people just blowing things out of proportion.
Right.
So I think the world of Patrick Corbin. Last year when he struggled, it was because of the long ball. So
right.
That's something that he's going to have to work on. Shelby Miller had both Shelby Miller and Zach Greinke came out in the first and second inning and looked unhittable.
Yeah.
Which has to feel good.
Right.
But teams will make adjustments. Good teams will make adjustments. The Cubs will make adjustments.
Right.
As much as it pains you to say, that team is on fire coming out of the gates, and that's going to be a tough weekend. On the other token, though, as we just have a few minutes left before we switch gears to talk to Pedro Gomez about more of this stuff, the hitting has looked great.
Definitely.
Jean Segura has picked up right where he left off in spring. And, man, what a phenomenal trade this would turn out to be if he can put together a – I didn't have to be a great all-star campaign. If he could just be a very solid guy at the top of their lineup, not only does that make that trade look good, it also alleviates the Ender Inciarte
right.
no longer being at the top of the lineup anymore, and at a position that they needed. Nick Ahmed hitting 474 one of the hottest hitters on the team as well.
To compliment his great fielding. I just love watching the guy.
His fielding is just amazing. Tomas comes out strong. Jake Lamb hits a two-run home run. David Peralta has come out hitting. Paul Goldschmidt doing Goldschmidt things. You know, the hitting was an area that we knew that they were pretty established. It was the pitching they needed to improve. But it's nice to see them pick up where they left off in spring because everyone was so concerned that, oh, they're wasting all their at-bats and hits and RBIs during spring training.
You know, the thing that jumped out at me when I was at the game yesterday, one was getting Corbin through seven, I thought was important for that team.
Oh,
I
absolutely.
Think they were thrilled about that. But you felt like in the eighth and ninth inning, you felt like this team can always come back. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that is a mentality that is something you haven't always felt with the Diamondbacks. And I think that's going to be a great trait this season just for that team, but also I think for fans who are going to games.
Being down there yesterday, whether it's good or bad, who is someone that you're just kind of captivated with on this roster currently?
You know, you mentioned Ahmed. I mean, I think that I love watching a guy who plays his position so well. And right now, you know, obviously Goldie and everything else at pitching staff, but he intrigues me just because of what he can bring to this team. And then you talked about how he's hitting the ball,
and
too.
It's, that's what tells me the most about Nick Ahmed, mm-hmm. is you bring in Gene Segura, mm-hmm. and he was getting, like, kind of touchy when you'd ask him about the notion of, you know, how his bat needs to improve, and is his bat major league ready? And no one questions your fielding, it's your hitting, and he's not the type of person that accepts being one-dimensional. And I saw on a couple different occasions, whether being down there or hearing the sound bites after the fact, that he kind of got a little testy about it. And the fact that he is answering the bell out of the gates with Segura hitting the cover off the ball, knowing Chris Owings as being Mr. Hybrid, that he needs to step up his game too, not just from the fielding, which we've seen even last year as well, but from a hitting standpoint.
No question.
I mean, man, that tells you a lot about him.
It does.
As a player, his character, his demeanor, his work ethic. I learned, we've seen a lot so far. I hope he can keep it going.
I agree. I just sort of taken that challenge, and there's just this ton of really good storylines with this team. I thought, you know, the guys that they had come in relief were promising yesterday. So it's going to be fun to unfold, see how it unfolds.
Absolutely. That's Paula Bovin of AZ Central Sports. I'm Jared Cohen, Sports 360 AZ. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today. And coming up next, ESPN baseball insider Pedro Gomez will join us, talk about a lot of the same stuff, but get a national perspective. That's coming up next. Again, that's Paula. I'm Jared, filling in for Brad on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Jared Cohen, Paula Bovin, filling in for Brad Sesmat today here on the show. We're going to be joined by Pedro Gomez, hopefully, in a few minutes. Let's continue talking a little bit of Diamondbacks baseball as the Cubs come to town. And the Chicago Cubs, hate them or love them, Paula, they are off to a smoking hot start. They go into Los Angeles against an Angels team that... this Angels team is interesting because, you know, Mike Socha's been there for a long time, and he's had a lot of success. But there has been a lot of turnover there in that organization, minus Socha.
Right.
They've lost a couple general managers in his tenure. Jerry DePoto, one of them, most recent GM to go. And they've got Mike Trout. They've got Albert Pujols. They've got a great group of once very heralded prospects and guys like Cole Calhoun, local kid out of Buckeye and ASU, and CJ Cron, and just these guys. And the Cubs went in there the opening week where the Angels have a lot on their shoulders this season and just waxed them. Just absolutely dominated them. And if you ever thought that there might be too much hype around a Cubs team going into a season where people might have to, you know, taper their expectations, they made the expectations that much crazier with what they did to the Angels. And I know how bad it was for the Angels because I, again, referencing my fantasy baseball team, because I'm a freaking nerd. I have Trout, Pujols, and I have one of their starting pitchers, and all three of them have off to a wretched start. Mike Trout's worst starts to a season. So the Cubs are coming to town, and let's talk about that with Pedro Gomez, who joins us here on the Brad Sesmat Show. Pedro, that's Paula Bovin. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad today. How's your opening week been?
Mine's been fine. Mine's been a lot better than the Padres or Angels or even the D-backs.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about the Padres in a minute, because I know you and I have scored as many runs as they've had so far this season. But let's first talk about the Diamondbacks. We referenced a little bit a little while ago, and I'd love to get your perspective. The overreaction there is in the world that we live in now with Twitter and social media, when starting pitchers that are heralded and expensive get lit up, for the lack of a better term. There's some people that are worried, but we're kind of tapering it, like they don't go crazy on us. But from your perspective, the starting pitching, disappointing, but you're not jumping off a cliff about them yet, are you?
Well, I wouldn't jump off a cliff regardless.
Yes. No, please don't do that. No, don't do that.
I mean, I would say this. Look, Zach Greinke's track record is pretty damn good. And, you know, I was at the game, and if you saw in that wretched fourth inning, everything started getting elevated. I mean, he was throwing everything up in the zone. His changeup was high. And I don't care what level of play you're at. If you're throwing a changeup and it's above the belt, it's going to get hammered. And that's high school, college, pro, whatever. He just started getting his pitches elevated. And you can't do that at the big league level, let alone any level, but especially at the big league level. You know, if that continues, then yes, of course there's reason to be worried. But his track record indicates that will not continue to be a problem. To me, the biggest issue that the D-backs faced during the first week is losing A.J. Pollock, mm-hmm. probably for the year. You know, you lose your center fielder, you lose your leadoff hitter, you lose one of the best players on the club. That is the most alarming issue that has come up for the D-backs. Shelby Miller and Patrick Corbin and Zach Greinke, they'll all straighten themselves out. A.J. Pollock can't straighten himself out until he's healthy, and that could very well be opening day of next year. I mean, we don't know. I know that I spoke to him, and he's hopeful that he can come back after the All-Star break, which, who knows, but after the All-Star break could be August, could be September. I mean, we don't know when, but that's not an injury that you usually come back from relatively quickly, and that to me is the biggest disconcerting news out of D-backs camp this past week.
Pedro, what are the biggest things they're losing by not having him in there? Obviously, we can look at that stat sheet and say this and this and this. What are the top couple things, do you think?
Well, I think it goes beyond stats.
Right.
I think it's you're right about that. I think you look at your leadoff hitter, the catalyst, a guy that is very highly respected inside that clubhouse who, even though he's not a vocal leader, he's a leader by example, kind of like Paul Goldschmidt is not a vocal leader. But yet Paul Goldschmidt is the unquestioned leader of that club. You can say a lot of things, or you can do a lot of things that mean more than saying a lot of things. And that's what Pollock had. Pollock and Goldschmidt forged a really strong friendship, and you could see that Pollock was following Goldschmidt's lead. And you don't need to say a lot. You just need to do a lot. And that's where they're going to be missing. Obviously, you know, you're putting Chris Owings out in center field, who's not a center fielder. And that's admirable and everything. But at some point, you're going to be missing a true center fielder. And you're going to be missing a true leadoff hitter. And to lose both of those things with one player, that is almost insurmountable. But we'll see. We'll see. Chip Hale has certainly done a good job over the first year of managing and being able to say, hey, that doesn't matter. We're going to keep pushing forward. This is going to be a big test for him.
No question about it. This is Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider, joins us every week on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Jared Cohen and Paula Bovin filling in for Brad today. Pedro, you know, Gene Segura, though, you mentioned they with Pollock, they lose that true leadoff type hitter. But, man, spring training and now going through the first series of the season, he seems to be locked in, and this could be a guy that could really, really help going forward if he can keep this up.
Without a doubt. Brad and I spoke about him last week, and I'm a big Gene Segura fan. I think that is a very, very good move the D-backs made in getting him. I think putting him, he's really a shortstop. So when you've got two shortstops playing up the middle in both Nick Ahmed and Gene Segura, It's something that's very comforting for a pitcher. And, you know, offensively, Gene Segura has shown that he is more than capable of being an above-average major leaguer. And, again, you move a guy who's a shortstop to second base, and it's just going to help on every level. So Gene Segura, without a doubt, if they didn't have him, I would almost say, you know, the ship would be sinking. Segura offers them a very steadying influence at the top of the order, as well as in the middle of the infield, which are two big, big pluses. That was an outstanding deal, I think, that the D-backs made over the winter and should pay huge dividends going forward.
You know, Pedro, we're just obviously 3-4 games into the season, so it's hard to come up with any sweeping generalities of what's exciting to you. Has anything caught your eye, even outside of the Diamondbacks, as far as how a team is playing, a player to watch? I know it's early, but what has been the interesting storylines for you so far?
Well, I mean, the Dodgers are off to a good start, but I think you should temper that because of who they're playing.
Yes. Right.
The Padres are not necessarily going to be a club that is going to contend this season. So the fact that they're off to this roaring start against really a club that probably will have trouble all season long, I think that, you know, as much as people want to read into, oh, look at the Dodgers, they're there. Let's temper that a little bit because of who they've played. Let's wait till they get a bigger chunk of the season behind them. I think the Cubs are off to a very, very good start, and that's interesting to see because it's tough to play from in front. And, you know, Vegas has the Cubs as the World Series favorite. And all spring, every Cub heard was how great they're going to be. And it's tough to play up to those expectations. Opening on the West Coast, I think, has been great for them. They're away from Chicago. They're away from their home, away from their a lot of noise that's going on in Chicago. So I think opening up in Anaheim and now playing these next four games here in Phoenix is probably, you couldn't ask for a better start of the season schedule-wise for a team that is that heavily favored and playing under high expectations in a city where, you know, they haven't won a World Series since 1908. So I think those are items to absolutely look for. I think the slide rule, which we saw come into play in the Tampa Bay-Toronto game, is something that is going to take some getting used to because that play the other day in Tampa, you know, for the last 130 years would not have been anything. And now all of a sudden it's the end of the game. And that's, it's going to take some getting used to for these players to understand what the slide rule is.
Pedro Gomez joining us here on the Brad Sesmatch Show with that slide rule. So I was of the opinion that, man, and knowing and growing up around baseball and you doing the same, it's you won't make that call back in the day, but it's a new world we live in. But at the same time, here being in the present, if they don't overturn that call, then that would have created issues going forward. So it was almost the type of thing where if they didn't make that call, it would have been worse than if they had made that call and ended up costing a Blue Jays a game, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's a new world, like you said. It's a brand new world, and the players are going to have to adjust to the rule. The rule is not going to adjust to the players, and that's going to be the bigger issue. And you can bet everything you have that every player in baseball, position player, has looked at that slide over and over and over. And I think clubs have probably told their players, you got to watch this. This is a reality. You've got to learn the rule. So, it's unfortunate for the Blue Jays that it cost them a game. But I would say costing a game in April is a hell of a lot better than costing a game in September.
No question about it.
No question. Pedro, there's one thing I forgot. I meant to ask you regarding the Diamondbacks. And we saw the other day Chip Hale getting a little chippy, kind of unlike Chip Hale. And the next day apologizing of something I thought really wasn't a very big deal. But, you know, in this media world, things become bigger than they seem to appear. I'm curious to you, do you get a sense of his status in that clubhouse? I know in baseball, maybe more than any other sport, that stuff really matters, the whole street cred, how they feel about their manager. Do you get a sense of how the players perceive Chip Hale now that he's been around a little bit?
Every Diamondback I've talked to, going back to last year, absolutely loves the energy that Chip Hale brings and the fighting spirit that he brings to that clubhouse. And I think that's something that, as much as Kirk Gibson was known as a fiery player, Kirk Gibson was also a superstar player. Chip Hale was never a superstar player. Chip Hale was always fighting for his major league life every single year. And I think a lot of times clubs play in the image of their manager. And, the Diamondbacks, if you look at them last year, they were a scrappy bunch. They were going to fight for everything. And that's how Chip Hale was as a player. And it's no surprise that the club is kind of taking on that personality. And everybody I've spoken to in that clubhouse absolutely loves the way Chip Hale handles the club. You know, at the end of the day, it's not Tony La Russa, it's not Dave Stewart who has to handle that clubhouse. It is only Chip Hale. He is the only one that matters to those players. They don't care about the front office in the sense of whatever they have to say doesn't matter because they're not in the dugout every game. And both La Russa and Dave Stewart understand that. They both know that the front office does its job, but they're not in the clubhouse. They're not in the dugout. Chip Hale is, and Chip Hale has everything I've talked to publicly, privately with players. He has immense respect, and that's really all you want as a manager.
Pedro, I'm sure you did this when you were in town, when you saw Greinke the other night. Did you catch up with Tomas, Yasmani Tomas, at all?
Of course I did.
Yeah, because, I know you did a lot with the Cuban game and the fact that he spent the whole off season here in Arizona and his family is out and they're expecting a kid and all that fun stuff. Do you see a change in Tomas from 1 year to the next? And what's his progression looking like from your
standpoint?
Well,
you definitely see a physical change.
Sure.
Yeah. He's trimmer than he was a year ago, and that was something that alarmed the D-backs greatly, and I think probably led to his not having a great season last year. And he took notice and did something about it. And in terms of his attitude, I absolutely see a different Yasmani Tomas. I think he understands now. Listen, a lot of these guys come from Cuba, and yes, some of them have had great success right away, like a Jose Abreu, like a Yasiel Puig. And some of them struggle a little bit because you're going from a season where you play 90 games and really there is no spring training the way there is here. You just do a couple of weeks of let's go, let's get in shape, let's go play, as opposed to six plus weeks of spring training where it's much more intense. And, sometimes not everybody adjusts to it right away. I think Tomas has a much better understanding of what a 162-game season is now. And, that's a big, big jump. It's kind of like when you talk to NBA guys when they come from the college ranks and they play 33, 35 games, and all of a sudden they're playing 82. And it's just a completely different animal for those players to understand what that takes. And I don't think Yasmani fully understood what a 162-game schedule was. He does now. And I would think that the benefits are going to be fairly evident quickly at his better understanding of it.
Pedro, thank you so much, as always, for your time. We appreciate it. And we'll catch up with you again next week.
All right, Paula. See ya. See ya, Jared.
See ya. That's Pedro Gomez joining us, ESPN Baseball Insider, here on the Brad Sesmat Show. And coming up next, we'll dive into that a little bit, plus talk about some other topics that are catching our eyes around the state of Arizona. That's Paula Bovin. I'm Jared Cohen filling in for Brad Sesmat today, and we got Earl Watson coming up around 10:50, so make sure you stay with us. We're streaming here on Sports360AZ.com and AZ Central Sports. Brad Sesmat Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. And to be honest, one of my favorite weekends is going on this weekend. My favorite is the first weekend of college basketball NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
Shortly after is the Masters. And we've had debates in the past. Eric's not really that keen in on it. He doesn't really care either way. And that's fine. Not everyone is, and not everyone's diehard golf. But if you're going to be a casual golf fan and watch some golf, this is the weekend to do it, because the Masters, it's a lot of fun. The course is nuts. These guys hit crazy shots.
Right.
Jordan Spieth trying to do something that's only done a handful of times is be a back-to-back Masters champion so far. In the front nine, he is 5-under. Pretty incredible. So,
see, he's on top of the board.
He's
right
on top of the board. Okay. He's 2-up on Daniel Berger, another American who's 3-under. Jason Day, 2-under with Matt Kuchar, Hideki Matsuyama, Justin Rose, Brant Snedeker, and Lee Westwood. Those guys are at 2-under. But Spieth is so much fun to watch. Did you see the story that came out? It was from the New York Post sent this story out as they were leading up to this week. Was Spieth being a Masters champion, I guess, felt like he didn't get to do enough being a Masters champion last year because he was so busy playing in all these other tournaments. He was excited to go back, bring his green jacket with him. And apparently there's this big dinner for Masters champions and the big cigars around Augusta and things like that, that apparently he told his caddy he couldn't go to. The caddy couldn't go. And it, like, was a story. So I was like, wow, so the caddy gets thrown under the bus.
Yeah, and, no kidding.
Yeah, I didn't read the full thing, but I just thought that that dynamic was funny. What do you, when you think Masters, what is Amen Corner? Is it the closing stages on Sundays? I know Tiger not being there hits close to home. It's fun to watch him at Augusta.
For me, the storylines that interest me this year, and I, as I mentioned right before we went on the air, not having Tiger there for me impacts my interest in it. But Spieth possibly repeating. I mean, I think that storyline is good. I think Rory can complete his Grand Slam if he can win. Phil is always an interesting story.
Yep,
I mean,
the
success that he's had there. I haven't seen his name anywhere on the leaderboard,
he's
but I don't know.
Even at this point.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, you know, there. So those are the stories I'm always looking for. And, you know, Phil can get in the mix. That seems to always sort of raise the interest of even the sort of average fan because there's such affection for him.
I've jumped on my soapbox a couple times on this topic. I know a lot of people, I as much as anyone, would be just glued to my television when Tiger was in his prime.
Right.
Because it was just the stuff that he was doing, it's just not human.
Right.
And he was incredible, and the drama that he would bring and his intensity was great. Watching Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Matt Kuchar, I love Keegan Bradley, Ricky Fowler. Who am I missing? Brooks Koepka, who was not last defending champion, but the year before at the Waste Management Open. There is this batch of young guys that are just incredible.
Right.
And because they're not crazy, captivating personalities, they don't get the Tiger attention, but they are playing and doing a lot of the things that Tiger did.
I've thought about that, Jared, why they don't inspire me to watch as much as Tiger did. And sometimes I can't even really get my brain around it, but I do think it was the incredible shots. There was a swagger. There was sort of this personality, even though
kind of an attitude.
Attitude, you know? And you shouldn't fault Spieth for being such a good guy and respectful of the game, but I feel like, frankly, that's what I'm doing sometimes, and it's not very nice, but it's my honest reaction.
But it is what it is. Well, I encourage people to watch this weekend because Spieth can do something that's only done, like I said, a handful of times in the history of golf, is try to win back-to-back Masters. Coming up next, Earl Watson, the interim head coach of the Phoenix Suns, is going to join us. Lots to talk about with the coach. It's Paula Bovin of AZ Central Sports. I'm Jared Cohen filling in for Brad Sesmat on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Streaming live on Sports 360 AZ as well as AZ Central Sports, it's the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jared Cohen, that's Paula Bovin. We're filling in for Brad today on the show, and we're very, very excited to be joined now by the interim head coach of the Phoenix Suns, Earl Watson, joining us here on the show. Coach, really appreciate you taking time to join us on the road trip. How are things going over there in Houston?
Things are well. Thanks for having me. Of course, you know, opportunity to get on with you guys is awesome.
That's great, Coach. I really appreciate it. Now, you're coming off a tough game in Atlanta, but I just, every time I look at a box score or watching a game, I just get more and more impressed with Devin Booker. And you just can't, I just feel like you can't say enough about what he's accomplished this season. Our producer Eric, we're discussing just yesterday, what were we doing at 19? Definitely not as impressive of what he's doing. Not to mention the spotlight, the eyeballs on him. Can you put into perspective what he is doing as a 19-year-old on this type of stage?
It's really hard to put into words or to define because it's very seldom seen in our league. Remove the basketball skill and how he's performing at a high level, let alone just the maturity he has to handle the success or even adversity we have as a season, but the success he's having as an individual. He separates the two and understands team is always first.
Now, Coach, I'm just curious, what is something at this point that we just don't know about Devin, as a whether it's a player or as a person off the court, on the court? You know, because we see he can put up 34 points in a game, which that 19-year-olds seldom do. It doesn't happen by accident. But as a person, what have you learned about him? Maybe something that just doesn't get talked about enough about this young man.
I think everything has been talked about. You know, we're in a social media age where we miss nothing. And the thing about Devin Booker is that this is not by accident. When I first met him, the mindset he has and his mental aspect and how he approaches everything from life to basketball is well beyond his years. And he has the uniqueness and the likeness of the mindset of the Kobe Bryants, of the Kevin Durants, and KD was my teammate, Russell's my teammate in OKC. He is on the same mindset plane. His skill is at a different level. It's beyond his years as a young KD. KD had a great rookie year. We know that.
You were there with him at KD's rookie
high level. Very, very similar.
Earl, what are the, you know, and I always love listening to you because, you know, your stories, your motivational techniques, and I know you talk to these guys at a sort of a deep level, and I'm wondering, what are the conversations you have most with Devin? I mean, obviously he's in a good place. You've talked about how mature he is, but from your experiences, what are the conversations you're having, you think, that you're trying to guide him or talk to him about?
You know, as you know, you follow me well, is that it's very seldom basketball.
Right.
The basketball always takes care of itself. So the last conversation we had on the deepest level is a book by Dr. Hawkins called Letting Go. And that's the book he's going to have to read at the end of the season. And it's almost like a study instead of just a read. So just preparing the mindset for the future to be great and have great moments throughout the playoffs, I think has to be prepared now.
Coach, you mentioned the off season. It's going to be coming pretty quick here. Just a couple games left, four to, I think, to be exact. You've had a lot of lines that I've just loved since you were named the interim coach, and that I've been really drawn to. But the one that really that I was impressed with and blown away about was when you were discussing the attitude of this off season on how, if you have the mentality of someone that competes just during the regular season that sends you home in April, you have to have that year-round championship mentality. Is that starting, do you see, to resonate with these guys, to know what it's going to be like this summer, to know what they need to do? Because it's one thing for you to push it, but the players need to live that as well.
Yeah, the sacrifice is most important. In the NBA, it's a revelation that most teams, if they're not in the playoffs or they're lottery-picked teams, right now there is no shoot-around. They just show up to games. We just got back from a shoot-around where we did a lot of teaching, a lot of developing, a lot of skill work. So the team has bought into not giving in to summer. I think our effort versus Atlanta showed that we're not looking forward to next week and going home. And we know as a group that we have to sacrifice year-round, mostly in the summer, to make improvements by leaps and bounds. If we don't sacrifice the summer, we will always go home in April.
Earl, I want to sort of get a feel of what your aspirations are. I know you are very much about the team right now. I would imagine that you want to continue this kind of head coaching role, whether it's with this team or another. I know there was rumors all over the internet today about the team maybe being interested in Jay Wright of Villanova as a coach. Sort of, what are your aspirations of your next step?
As you all know, that I feel like I'm going to be an NBA coach and maybe end up my career coaching at UCLA. So alma mater, love my school. I'm very indebted to them. And my aspirations is finishing up this season is teaching the kids how to play the right way, allowing them to keep continuing to build and continue to grow, and opportunity will flow my way easily. I've meant to do this. This is what I was born to do. I've been prepared and, you know, prepped by some of the greatest to ever do it. I embrace that. I'm very grateful for the opportunity. But I don't even have an agent. So, like, you know, this week I'm going to solidify and finalize my agency paperwork. And then from the summer, I'll let the agents just take care of his business and, you know, develop the opportunities or whatever that may be. But I want to end with this season, giving this group all I have and the knowledge that I can with the time we have. Because I think it's very important to always leave something better than the way you found it.
Coach, I'm sure you've been nose deep in this team and how you're trying to finish strong and have that program mentality that you've been pushing for since you got started. Have you had even time to talk with the front office about anything potential, or is that, you think, going to be more so once the season is over?
It's been minimal talk, and I said this all along. Even as an assistant, my contract ended this season. So I never really worry about the next opportunity. I think when you play 13 years in the NBA, you get used to embracing and being comfortable being uncomfortable. And I've always been very comfortable in unsecured situations or opportunities. So it is what it is. I'm going to always make my best and do my best and have a positive attitude. And at the end of the day, it's all a choice if you choose to embrace it or not.
Do you learn anything about yourself this year with this job? I know you've had other experiences doing this kind of thing, but anything you learned about Earl Watson this year?
Yeah, absolutely. The opportunity to coach and lead an amazing franchise and help teach is always amazing. What I believe in most is sits true, and it's solidified that the connection and communication to the player or teaching them to be better people is more important than better basketball players. And more than anything, I don't want to be average. I don't want to be content. I want to be great. So it stoked a fire that's burning more than it did before I even coached.
Coach, when you took over this team and as in a head coaching capacity, who is a guy that just doesn't get talked about enough on this roster that you've just been somewhat captivated with, impressed with, kind of taken back by, that maybe you didn't see in an assistant role or maybe even before that didn't have a good understanding or appreciation for before you joined this organization?
I wouldn't say that underappreciation, but I think a guy you value most as a head coach are two guys, PJ Tucker, Tyson Chandler. Tyson, we can start with him. NBA champion, has a gold medal. He's won. He's in his 15th year, but yet he plays hard for this program as if he's a rookie trying to send a statement to keep him on the roster to earn a position next year. PJ Tucker, his game has elevated. He's become more of a threat. He's playing with his heart. Last game was a challenging game, but he's there every game, and he's vocal, and he's there. He's toughness. All of that is going to be great role models, and Ronnie Price, great role models for Devin Booker. So no matter what happens moving forward, any adversity that hits this young team, this young core, Alex Lynn, Devin Booker, TJ, Brandon Knight, Eric Bledsoe, they're going to now embrace it and attack it and reflect back on these moments where they gave their all, they didn't quit, and they understood that hard work and perseverance is the only way to succeed in this league.
You know, Earl, and I know this is sort of ancient history, but I didn't get a chance to ask you, is there any, I guess, I don't know, remorse or maybe wish there was a way things could have gone differently with Markieff? The way the situation sort of ended here and the way it ended with fans. I mean, when you look back, do you wish there could have been things the organization did differently, or are there any regrets in there?
You know what? The truth of it is I stepped in it at the end.
Right.
Like, I was never there for the beginning.
Sure.
So I don't know the full story. But I do know that the time since I took over, he played really well. And I would say this to every young player coming into the NBA. No matter what, and I say this to my team all the time, attitude is a choice. It doesn't matter what happens in life. We either choose to be discouraged or continue to be encouraged. No matter what happens in life, we can't react in a way of immaturity, no matter how old we are. We have to be mature, embrace it, surrender, and grow from it. Use it as motivation. And I think he's a prime example for a lot of young kids. And I think he still has an opportunity to right his wrongs.
Coach, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it. And good luck tonight in Houston.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
That's head coach, interim head coach Earl Watson joining us here on the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jared Cohen filling in for Paula Bovin. Good stuff there with Coach.
I hope he gets an opportunity. I really have respected him. If I was a player, I think he's the kind of guy I'd want to play for, because there does seem to be a personal connection. He's very motivating, and, you know, maybe he needs to, you know, get a little more experience in the NBA. I think that's probably the perception, but I hope he gets it at some point.
A couple things really quick before we wrap it up here today. The first being, he's won me over from Everything except for maybe the X's and O's, because that just comes with time.
Right.
You know, we haven't seen with a complete roster, one that sets him up for success, what he can do in terms of winning on the floor, on game nights, things like that. But everything else, and that's something that he can't even control at this point.
Right.
You just don't know. He has a depleted roster, a young roster.
Sure.
And it's just at a point in the season when he took over where the team knew they weren't going anywhere this year. But everything else that he has said and done has been backed up.
Right.
The way the team has fought, the way the team has played, the growth of some players. He mentioned P.J. Tucker. I think he has taken another. I always looked at P.J. Tucker as more of the type of guy that you'd love to have coming off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
I still kind of see him in that role for a good team. But he almost had a triple-double
right.
the other night. And Tyson Chandler, he's... under Watson has showed that he could be part of the solution and he isn't part of the problem, and everyone was so quick to say we got to get rid of that contract, and he could be part of the solution seeing how he has handled himself since Coach Watson took over.
Yeah, and real quick, you mentioned Tucker and kind of watching him around Booker, and I don't think people appreciate how valuable Tucker has been in that locker room and kind of taking some of these young guys under his wings. So.
No question. Paula, thank you so much for filling in today.
Lots of fun.
Thanks for Earl Watson. Thanks for Pedro Gomez. This is for today's Brad Sesmatch Show. Thanks for joining us on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports.